Hi, I'm Tom, and I'm a Gen X grown-up, and I support Gen X grown-up on Patreon. And you should, too. Go to patreon.com/GenXGrownUp.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
Gen X grown-up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown-Up Podcast listeners, to episode 75 of the Gen X Grown-Up Podcast. I'm John. Joining me, as always, is George.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
And Mo is here.
Hey, everybody.
In this episode, we watch a new animated medieval comedy from the producers of Robot Chicken. One of us got a sweet new flagship cell phone. We'll find out which model we chose and why. And we play an early access game that puts you in the spacesuit of an orbital salvage crew.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to pause for a second here, and you realize it's now July. It's
oh
the second
God.
Half of 2020.
That's crazy.
What a blur of bullshit this year has been so far.
It's only halfway done.
Yeah, I can't believe we've squandered an entire half a year with this. Anyway.
Have we really squandered half a year? Is it our fault that half a year has gone this quickly and this shitty?
Yeah, really.
I'm not saying it's our fault. I'm just saying it's been a waste.
If it is, I want to know which one of the three of us started this damn thing so I can go kill it.
I blame John.
I think
fair
it's
enough. Let's blame John. 2-1.
2-1.
There you go. The apocalypse is my fault. Democracy rules. Before we get into the body of the show, we have some fourth listener email. This time it's from Tim, also known as Butter Spider, one of our great friends we've met at the MegaCon, nice. And he's on our Discord channel all the time.
Yeah, we have.
And he wrote in with a subject line, new show you should check out.
Cool.
And he says, hey guys, I wanted to tell you about a hidden gem of a show I stumbled upon this week. I had this show pop up on my Hulu suggestions called Crossing Swords.
We're going to be talking about that.
Not going to be checking that out. Sorry.
No, you will.
I'm done.
You will. Trust me.
That title is exactly as suggestive as you think it is, George.
Oh, God.
Yes.
He says, it looked like an animated stop-motion kids show about knights and dragons and the like. I thought it might be a fun show to watch with my daughter.
Oh, no.
So I started to watch the first episode to check it out.
No, he did.
He did. He did.
Oh, dude.
He says, as soon as I started, I was thinking, Dora the Explorer, here we come. But oh, my God, about 2 or 3 minutes in, I realized this is no kids show.
No.
This is actually Mo's pick for media.
Yes,
so we're going to dive deeper into this in a second, Butter Spider.
Oh,
so.
Man. Dude, I feel for you. Oh, my God.
You'll find out why.
Yeah.
He said, I had watched the entire first episode before I realized it. I was laughing my ass off. This is Laugh Fest wrapped in a onesie. If you enjoy Solar Opposites, you'll definitely appreciate Crossing Swords. Do yourself a favor and check it out. All right. We will be talking about that.
Yeah,
absolutely. In the media segment. He wraps it up by saying, love the podcast, Tim. We love it every time the fourth listener writes in. Tim, thank you very much for writing in. And you're going to get featured even more prominently because we're going to talk all about your show. We have checked it out.
It's Tim's show.
In the media segment in just a second.
Tim owns it?
Well, it is now. He's now responsible.
Okay, Tim.
He showed it to his daughter.
Yeah, congratulations. Thank you for stopping by and talking with us small fries.
Thank you, Tim, for writing in. We appreciate every time the fourth listener writes us. If you'd like to have your email read here on the show, just hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We read everyone, and most of them make this show. All right. We're going to get on to the rest of Tim's show with media right after this.
Weekdays at 2, meet the Munster.
You don't fool around with a head like Herman's.
I disagree.
Hey, Hank, watch out! The rope's gonna break!
Body of Munster. That's just my way of getting acquainted.
Get acquainted with the Munsters weekdays at 2 on Channel 17.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
Tim, here we go with your media segment. We'll start actually right here at the top.
It's Tim's media segment now. Damn, Tim owns everything.
Yeah.
Special just for this episode. That's right.
It's
coincidental that he wrote the same time that we had checked out this show. So, Mo, let's get it over to you. This was actually your pick for media this week.
Oh, my God. He showed us to his daughter.
He did. Tell us about Crossing Swords.
Yeah.
Well, I think he said he was going to show it to his daughter until he started watching it.
He must have started watching with his daughter, maybe. I don't know. But anyway, okay, let's get into it.
It's good parenting, however you look at it.
Yeah, exactly. So, let's put it this way. The, you know how they do the little TVMA in the corner when they start these things?
Yep.
Not enough.
Wow.
They needed to be more explicit on that warning, because when you see the trailer, you guys, I'm sure, are going to look at it. It looks like a kid show.
All right. So set us up. So tell us the premise of this show.
So the premise is that there is a medieval times, and there's this young guy who wants to be a squire. That's his life aspiration, because he sees it as this noble pursuit and all this stuff. And he gets in there and he finds out that the court is actually a cesspool. And that's in the description of the show, of like corruption and people having sex all the times and infidelity and just corruption. It's just horrible. And he's like very idealistic. So now this show is, it's like a stop. It looks like stop motion. Now it could be computer made to look like stop motion. I don't know.
Okay.
And the art style is like the 70s era Fisher Price little action figures, like the wooden body guys.
Yeah. The characters are like, the bodies are cylinders.
Yeah.
You know, the heads are spheres on top. They have no arms,
so cute,
but they carry stuff. It looks adorable until you see them with no clothes on.
What?
Yeah.
George just woke up. I want to go on record and saying that by the end of the first episode, someone has been showered in flaming cat heads. So just going to put that on
there
record.
There you go. Put that in context. I think we've established that this is not for kids, but it was cracking me up. It's just like so wrong on every level you can imagine, that there's, like you said, he's like this idealistic guy. He's like, he just sees being a knight ultimately as being like the pinnacle of honor and justice. And instead it's like, oh, you want to get in? Well, you know, you're going to have to either know somebody or bribe somebody or have sex with somebody. Or
this is on Hulu. I assume you found it the same way, or somebody recommended to you. How'd you find it?
I just found it on random, actually. But yeah.
Oh, did you? Okay. How much have you watched?
I saw the whole thing.
Have you?
Because they're short episodes. There's like 8 of them and they're like 22 minutes, you know, or 30 minutes. You know, they're bite-sized things. It's all one storyline of him in his quest to become a squire. The whole show, I can't, it's hard to describe it. Just everything that you could imagine that you would not put into a children's show is in this show.
And then make it look like a children's show.
And
it's like,
it's
fine to make a super adult show, but then like you paint it like it's a kid's show. Let's take just the most raucous, like we're going to take the Sopranos, we're going to make it look like The Simpsons. It's that kind of like disjointed, like those shouldn't go together. That doesn't match.
Yeah. And just an example, like they talk about like all the prospective squires have to have a meeting with the queen, and you go in there and she's naked. She's like, okay, let's do this. So that's the show. And it's funny, though. I mean, it is very, very funny.
I watched some of this because Tim sent an email and suggested it. Yeah. So I'm like, well, I'll check it out. Maybe I'll watch. So I'm glad you enjoyed it. I tried to enjoy it.
Okay.
I found they were trying too hard to be foul. Like, it was unnecessary. It was forced.
It was definitely over the top, for sure. I agree.
I felt it was beyond over the top. Over the top would have been, it's just, again, they're trying too hard. It's like, it's not funny unless we make it really, really obscene. And so they work so hard at making it obscene that's the only humor I found in it. Was that, maybe I didn't watch all of it. I watched the first two or three, and then I said, I can't do any more of this. Does it change? Does it get better? Or is that the method? Is that how they get their humor?
The story develops a little bit more, but yeah, that's pretty much it.
It just stays bathroom humor. Okay.
So
it looks like a thumbs up and a thumbs down. George, what do you think? You'll give this a try?
Oh, hell no. I already told you from the title alone, I was done. I'm not watching anything called Crossing Swords. I'm just not going to do it. No.
On principle alone.
I'll tell you this. There is no Crossing Swords.
There is no crossing of the swords in the show.
Yes.
It sounds like that's the only thing there isn't any of. Apparently, everything else is free game.
And pretty much, yeah.
They're saving that for season two.
That's pretty much it.
They're building up to the crossing of the swords. That's coming.
Yeah. So this is kind of lowbrow humor, I admit it. So, George, I know you got something else with the humor side, right?
Something highbrow, perhaps.
Yes.
No, it's neither. It's not even humorous, really. Honestly.
Oh, really?
No. So last time I talked about in Looking Forward that I was looking forward to a new show that had basically no trailers or anything out there called Tournament of Laughs.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
I looked for it after you brought it up and I couldn't find squat.
Yeah, there was nothing out there, right?
It sounds like that may be for the best.
Matter of fact, I missed the premiere because I forgot what day it was going to show up on. And like a week later, I was like, oh, there's the premiere. It's already happened.
Okay.
So they air this thing every Sunday night and it's exactly what the title sounds like. It is a 32 comedian bracket shit like March Madness, and they filmed their own vignettes at their home, and they're high production quality vignettes. It's not just a cell phone camera and a guy telling jokes. They do stories and setups, and they have like little mini episodes, and they're usually like, I don't know, like a minute and a half or so.
Oh wow, not much time.
And I think when you talked about it, you said it's going to be like song parodies and sketches and skits and stuff. Just anything goes almost.
Yeah, and they have a lot of well-known comedians. Margaret Cho is one of the first people in there for one of the brackets. They also set it up in American Idol style in that the audience at home who's viewing gets to vote to see who makes it through to the next level. Apparently, though, I'm not sure what the time frame is because they never say it in the episode, but the voting window closes sometime well before the next episode, because we watched it on a Thursday. It had aired on a Sunday and the voting polls had already closed. Sure. At that point. So I'm guessing they probably leave them open for a day at the most, maybe.
Oh, okay.
The only funny part of the show is Jason Sudeikis, the host.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, he's really good. He does these in-between segments where he sets up who's about to be on the challenge and talks about different things going on with the show. And he's very funny. He's Jason Sudeikis at his best that he can be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's no audience, obviously. There's no laugh tracks or anything. That's one of the things that takes away from it a little bit sometimes, because
stand-up. You need it, don't you? Kind of?
Yeah, I think you kind of do a little bit. And so when some of them are just doing straight jokes, like there's a guy who he does a comedy song that he plays on his record about kids being assholes, right in line with Crossing Swords, apparently. And it's just as funny as you would imagine with no audience. It's kind of clever, but if nobody else is laughing, it kind of doesn't just draw it out.
That infectious quality just isn't there, is it?
Yeah. I also think the stand-up comedians seem to feed off audiences too. So.
Oh, yeah.
I think so. And they have some high quality comedians and some people I haven't heard of and some in-betweens and stuff. But honestly, I don't know that I would recommend spending the 30 minutes or so that this show takes to watch. Mm. I mean, unless you really are desperate for content at this point and you really want to be involved in the voting and seeing who gets through, like Gilbert Gottfried was one of the people, Margaret Cho. Unless you're just really into trying to get one of those people to get through the bracket and you really love them, I just really can't recommend the show. It's not that good.
Mm-hmm. So you think you'll continue or let this one go and move on?
No, I think I'm done. Else? Yeah.
You're done?
Yeah. One episode was enough for me. I sat in with my wife and watched it. She didn't enjoy it either. And she normally likes comedy stuff. So yeah, I don't think I can recommend going.
I'm sorry it didn't pan out for you. I know you were curious just based on the name and you had high hopes. I know. So that's too bad.
And, you know, at least now I kind of understand why there were no trailers or no stuff ahead of time, because I think maybe they
knew. Highlights.
It's not that good.
That'll do it.
Yeah, if it's only like minute clips and stuff, it's like, what are you going to do for a highlight? Show everything? I mean,
Jeez,
that sucks. Because it sounded like it could have been funny.
I think it could have been. I think maybe they rushed into production just to get something going because, as you know, during COVID-19, it's not like they can do audience-driven comedy shows.
Yeah,
it's hard to do anything where people are in even the same studio right now. They're all doing this from home like they are with this show.
Good on them for trying, right? Yeah. At least they gave it a shot. And you know, maybe it'll turn into something. Maybe they'll find a format that works for them. But we can revisit it. If it survives and it gets retooled, maybe we'll revisit it. The concept sounded interesting, at least.
Yeah, sure. They're very. Yep.
What about you, John? You watch anything?
I have one that I might be able to pull us out of this nosedive. So,
okay.
you'll remember the Creepshow series that came out last year on Shudder.
Yeah. Yes.
The subscribe-only horror thing.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
And I stumbled across something else on Shudder. Another great reason to have Shudder. There is a new short-form series called Cursed Films that popped up on Shudder last week.
I like the title.
Yeah, this is the one you told me about.
I did. In fact, I think I phoned George. You know what a nut he is over old horror films. And I said, I'm going to tell you about this show, but you can't steal it for the media segment next time we get up here for the podcast.
That's right.
True to his word, he did not. But yeah, so it's called Cursed Films. It's only 5 episodes long this first season. And maybe they're feeling it out, or maybe it's going to turn. It looks like it's going to be a longer form thing.
Mm-hmm.
Reminds me of how In Search Of, like the first season of In Search Of, they did Loch Ness Monster, they did Bigfoot, they did UFOs, and then season 5, what the hell do you cover? So how many cursed films are there to do this? But the ones they picked out of the gate for these first 5 episodes, spoiler alert, these are great. So you're going to want to watch this if you enjoy these old like 80s era, 90s era horror films. They cover The Exorcist, The Omen, Poltergeist, The Crow, and Twilight Zone the movie.
So wait, so what's the premise of the show? I mean,
so the premise is, in Hollywood, around many horror or kind of thriller films, there are often things going on someone on the set or surrounding the production that people consider it to be cursed or doomed to fail. Or like, for example, Poltergeist, like mm-hmm. people associated with Poltergeist died around the production, and there are rumors of the real bodies in the pool. And of course, The Crow, you had Brandon Lee, who passed away during the production in a terrible accident. And so they're just exploring this, but it's not sensationalistic. You're actually talking to the real filmmakers, to the real actors, and talking about, it's actually pulling back from cursed. It's really talking about the concept of a cursed film and talking about what happened. So it's much more historical and kind of like archival footage and stuff about the film.
It's not like there's a voiceover that sits there, could it be a ghost that did this?
No, you know, it's not the Curse of Oak Island.
Definitely not.
Okay.
The takeaway for all of them really is there is no curse. They really talk about what truly happened. And, you know, some of the actors even come on and go, they're like, look, it's disrespectful to call this a curse. A man died, a terrible accident. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it really, the concept of cursed films is kind of just an entry into lumping these together to start talking about them as great horror films that had some kind of a dark cloud around them for one reason or the other.
Oh, well, and explaining some of the clouds that you think were around them, like the Exorcist episode. Yeah. I loved how they talked about some of the stuff that was weird that happened on set. Like, there really was a guy who was in The Exorcist that turned out later to be a murderer.
To be a murderer.
Yeah. Really interesting.
Yeah. Holy crap.
It had nothing to do with the film. It was just this weird set of circumstances, and he ended up in the film. Mm-hmm. But then also talking about how there were things that everybody was, oh, people go to The Exorcist and they throw up and they pass out and thing. And all of that was more of a hype machine than it was what was really happening. It was trying to get people to come to see the film because they didn't really expect people to want to watch the movie.
Yeah. Right. Well, and they talk about in the series how what happens is like promoters lean into these rumors because if people go,
of course,
you will pass out during the film, you're like, well, I've got to find out if I pass out. Like, they'll lean into that. And that has helped to grow this kind of perception of a curse.
Is it, who is it that supposedly like ripped the head off a chicken during a concert? And
Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh, Ozzy Osbourne.
Which never actually happened. But he like totally leaned into it because he's like, hey.
Why not? People say I did it. It's selling tickets. Okay. So it's pretty decent. I enjoyed it. I hope they continue with it. And if you're all concerned that they're being disrespectful to the films and being sensationalistic, they're really debunking the curses in there. Sounds like, George, you checked it out, which is awesome. I hope you enjoyed it.
I did. Yeah, I watched the first episode only.
Okay.
And that was mainly because I really want to take time to savor all of them.
They're good.
I'm going to watch one per week so that it takes a little bit of time. Because
I couldn't do that. I binged them.
It's not like I'm going to go back and watch Tournament of Laughs or anything like that. So
you're not. No, you're not.
Got a special feeling for my feeling special puppy. I know how he feels.
It hurts.
Cause he tells me.
I'm sorry.
Batteries not included.
When my feeling special puppy has too much to eat, I know how he feels. Cause he tells me.
The new feeling special pets, each sold separately. When you touch them, you'll know how they feel.
Cause they tell you.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
So going into tech toys, I want to talk about something that thankfully my daughter gave me for Father's Day.
Wait, hold on. Yeah. You have something for tech and toys?
He does.
It's a little bit of a reach, but yes, I do.
But I'll be damned if I'm going to be raked over the coals 2 weeks in a row. No.
Exactly. Especially after last time. I mean, I still have the scars from that. No, for Father's Day, my daughter, she knows me so well. She got me this book. It's called The Game Console. It's a photographic history from Atari to Xbox.
Oh, nice. Okay. I like those kind of books.
And actually, the title's a little misleading because it actually goes up to the Switch. They added to it. It actually goes past the Xbox.
So this this like one of those big, like, glossy coffee table book sort of things?
Yes, exactly. It's like a big coffee table. Matter of fact, it's like the best coffee table book because it's one I like, put on my coffee table and I constantly pick up and flip through.
Okay.
Everybody that's seen it has like couldn't help themselves. Like, they have to flip through and find the console that they had.
Right.
Like, it's really awesome because the pictures and stuff are not just like the, it's like the pictures of the console. It's a picture of the boards inside. They talk about the history.
Oh,
they
sure.
talk about the technology in it. Mm. They talk about like what made it special mm-hmm. from previous stuff.
What did it do that was revolutionary from the last
generation?
They did
these like exploded views of things like the Game Boy. They did an exploded view of the Game Boy in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really, really cool, like, it's not one you're going to read like cover to cover, obviously, but it's one that you're going to like, you flip through it and you're like, oh, it's either what, like Tiger R Zone. What the hell was that? You know,
and you realize
that there's all these like video game consoles that you never heard of before. And it's just interesting because you kind of see how, I think this is also kind of shows how far computers and technology have come. Because you mm-hmm. look at the early days, because it starts with Pong, actually. That's the first one it comes with.
Which was a completely solid state, like single function board.
Solid
it was
state,
built to
huge
do one thing.
For what it actually did. Ends up with like the Switch, and you look at the sleek, very futuristic looking, very clean looking thing, you know, whereas
like
the first
phone,
Pong
yeah.
looked like a brick. I mean, it was just mm-hmm. the form factor was made to hold the boards, and that was about it. Like, they didn't care about style or anything else.
So I know you showed us on the chat, it's like about a 2-inch thick book. It's a beast there.
Yeah.
So do you have any idea how much this ran? Because I collect these kind of books and I have several of them, but they're usually a premium.
Well, the retail on the back is $25.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what it says in the back.
And it's a hardback.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Wow.
It's
pretty cheap.
250 pages.
I collect these kind of books. And
per page price is awesome.
It's beefy.
but yeah, John, I think this is one that you're going to definitely want because this is like totally in your wheelhouse of stuff that you care about.
So I got a question for you, Mo. I want to ask because I've seen a lot of these different coffee table books. John has several of them. I have several of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I've noticed three different types when it comes to these nostalgic lookbacks mm-hmm. at video games or consoles or any of those things. There's ones that have either nothing but pictures with a small little bit of text to describe what the picture might be mm-hmm. representing. Then there's other ones which it's an encyclopedia of text with a couple of pictures splashed on the page. And then there is a combination where it's kind of like the page is half picture, half text.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious which one this one is. And if you've seen all three of those, which one you prefer?
This is definitely that middle ground.
Okay.
There's a lot of text for
okay,
each one, a lot of good description with the pictures that go along with it.
Yeah.
Personally, I like this style more so than the other ones because just pictures don't do it for me.
Okay.
I mean, they're great to look at, but they don't really tell me enough. And then the other side too is like, if I want to read an encyclopedia, you know, I'll go on Wikipedia and read
right,
that.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
It's
right.
just too much text.
I can get the information.
But this is a good balance. Like, it's just enough that you read, to me, like when you read about each console, I feel like, okay, like I don't feel like I'm missing anything really significant. And if I really want a deep dive, like I said, I'll go look up something else. But
yeah, like
I really
you're not reading somebody's
deep.
Doctoral thesis on
yeah,
that
yeah,
console.
Exactly.
Right.
So it's a solid overview, a little technical nugget, and then move on to the next thing.
Absolutely.
So it's good coverage. All right. And I assume this is something you can throw a link to down in the show
absolutely.
Notes.
You know, believe it or not, this will be a perfect Amazon link because remember when Amazon used to sell just books?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
So this is one that they'll definitely have on their list.
A nice ad.
So that's cool. So what do you got for us, George? I know you got, wait a minute. Hold up a second. Did I hear this right at the beginning of the show that you got something ahead of John?
Well, I guess maybe I did. I don't think John has this version yet. So yeah, I kind of,
wow.
I'm not early adopting because the thing's been out for several months, but I definitely got it before John did. So
you beat
that's
me to
one
the point.
Up
wow.
for Joe and George right there, you know.
Woohoo! So what is it, man?
So it's the Galaxy S20 Plus. I needed a new cell phone because my S8 Plus, which I've enjoyed for several years, which I honestly had to buy because 2 or 3 years ago, I was over here at John's and I had some, I forgot what that phone was. I can't even remember. It was an LG piece of crap, whatever it was. And it literally died while I was here at John's house. And, you know, I realized how far we've gone from our roots because I was like, how the hell am I going to get back home without Google Maps? What am I going to do? I'm like, damn it. I'm a Gen X grown up. I know what real maps are. I can find my way. I can
read
road signs.
Will they let me on the interstate without a phone?
So that time when I got home, I bought the Galaxy S8 Plus and I really loved it. It's been a great phone for several years. However, through my own stupidity, I dropped it a couple of times, cracked the screen, and then another couple more drops and the back started to separate from the front.
A couple more drops.
The first two drops weren't enough.
Yeah, right. You know,
times.
It's been like 3 years. I've dropped it like 5 times.
All
come
right.
on. So
me and John are just looking at each other like, okay,
you dropped your phone.
It gave me like weird warnings. Like you've got moisture in your charge port. And I'm like, are you trying to hit on me? What the hell is this phone trying to ask me right now?
What crossing swords all over again.
Oh
my God.
What a piece of crap. You know, you throw in the ground seven or eight times and it starts not working. Garbage.
So I knew the phone was probably 2 or 3 months away from failing. So I said, I'm not going to wait for it to fail before I get a new phone and then lose the stuff that I have on it. So I went out during Father's Day weekend, the sales that were going on, and I went over to Best Buy with my wife, and she was kind enough to let me pick up the new Galaxy S20 Plus. And that's as much as I can tell you about it. I have no idea about the specs on the damn thing. I know it's got a Snapdragon 845 and like, I think 12 gigs of RAM.
You don't know
specs,
but you're quoting chips?
Well, because those were the only things I cared about, was that it had that new Snapdragon over.
Yeah, it's fast.
There are two models of chips in this particular phone, one for America, one for Europe, but some of the Europe phones got sold over here apparently with that chipset. And I didn't want that one, so I wanted to double check. And
I see. Why didn't you want it? What does that one not do or do that you didn't like?
It apparently has a little bit weaker thread count that slows the phone processing down, but that's just what had seen in a few reviews.
Okay.
There are three models in the S20 line. There's the S20, the S20 Plus, and then the S20 Ultra.
Yeah, it's enormous.
The bigger decision was whether to get the S20 Plus or the S20 Ultra. I went and read a lot of reviews, watched a lot of YouTube videos, and it seemed as though the price difference on the S20 Ultra didn't give you enough bang for your buck to make you want to upgrade over the S20 Plus. So that's why I went with the middle one.
Was the big difference between those two?
Like $600. That was the big difference.
Oh, I mean, what about features? I mean,
there wasn't really a lot other than screen size real estate. And I held the two phones there at Best Buy. I held them in my hand. And that S20 Ultra is really bordering on too large to hold comfortably in your hand.
Yeah.
It's almost like a phablet.
It is. Yeah.
I looked at your S20 Plus and it's a tiny bit larger than my S10 Plus.
Right. Just
so I can only
bit.
Imagine the Ultra is another like half inch diagonally larger. Mm-hmm. It really is. It's getting to where, I'm going to need bigger pockets to carry phones much bigger than that.
Yeah.
And it's got to get ridiculous.
So far, one of the things that I love the most about it is I didn't have two Samsung products before for smartphones. I had LGs and Motorola's and different things, but they have an app on the Samsung line only called Smart Switch. And I'm sure John may have noticed that since he's bought several different Samsung.
Migrating from one to another.
Yeah. You load this app on both phones. You put them next to each other, like the old remotes that you used to do when you would program buttons from one to another.
Nose to nose. And kind of
You go through a couple of menu choices on each one. One becomes the receiving phone. The other one becomes a transmitting phone. And it transmits everything. Settings, files.
Nice.
Everything
icon
you can think
layouts.
Of.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that great?
I was worried about my background that John helped me create. It's me and my son when he won his state championship football trophy. And John helped me do some touch-ups on it. And so I've had that as my background on my phone. I was like, oh, I'm going to lose that. It's going to be a pain in the ass to get it back. Nope. With Smart Switch, right there.
Everything is over. So Spacey's your stuff on a new phone.
It's exactly right. It made it so easy.
That's
now I have
to
go in every now and then and log into an app because I haven't logged into it yet on this phone.
For the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
that's normal.
That's minor compared to how easy the transition was.
Mm-hmm. Well, now you can get started throwing this phone on the ground and really head toward the next upgrade. I'm a little jealous of that S20 Plus, but the nice thing about my S10 Plus, which is funny, they jumped from, they went 7, 8, 9, 10, 20. I'm like, damn, I'm 10 behind all of a sudden.
Right.
I mean, I didn't even look for those because I've been so happy with my S10 Plus. It's been great for me. And I the difference probably is that I haven't thrown mine on the ground. So that's probably made a bit of a difference. But it's such that it's becoming so iterative. There's no huge gotta have killer feature on these phones. Yeah. And I think the 20 is where they finally have completely abandoned the headphone jack. Is that right?
Do
I remember that correctly?
Yes, they went iPhone route. So I get but they do include a set of USB-C headphones with it. So you get the new style headphones that have the USB-C plug. And at first I was like, oh, that sucks. And then I'm like, wait a minute, I am never charging my phone with
at the same
port
time
while I'm
listening
to it. So that makes total sense to me. And I love the new connection.
USB-C is
awesome. I will say, like you said, John, they're iterative things. If I had been on the S10, I wouldn't have upgraded this unless it was broken. The S8 to the S20 was enough of a jump to make it worth it to spend
$1,000. That makes sense.
The new camera system is really nice and it has all the different focal length things and stuff. So that's different. But if you've got an S10 and you're happy with it, do not upgrade to the S20. You're just spending $1,000.
I think, John, somewhere in the back of his head, he's like, you have to have the new phone, John.
I'm fighting that urge. I'm fighting it with all my might.
George has a better phone than you now, John.
You shut up, Mo. You shut up. You're not funny.
That's awesome. I'm glad you're happy with it, though. So try not to drop this one, though.
I'll try not to
drop it. That's solid advice for pretty much everything you own.
It's going to be a golden gray old day.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, time for the Generation X game segment.
Yes, it is.
And since John doesn't have any good technology to talk about, we're going to let him start off the game segment with his new video game. John, what are you playing with today? And please don't tell me Crossing Swords.
No, I'm not playing Crossing Swords. No. I've tried that. Wasn't a fan. That's true. Another board game for me, not a video game. Often we cover video games. They're easy to cover here. But I've been on a tear lately. I mean, we talked about the Pac-Man and the Miss Pac-Man and the things. And so I'd had several of these board games that have come out in the last few years from IDW. And they did a Missile Command. They did a Centipede. They did a Joust, I think. Several of them. Of course, it's an obvious gift for me. And so every Christmas, I get another one of these things. And I've had a stack of them in the closet in shrink wrap.
Wow.
And the other day, I'm like, we should try one of these. So we took one out of the closet. So I gave Centipede board game a try. Now, this is, I mentioned, from IDW, come out just 2 or 3 years ago. And it's basically the original Centipede arcade game. And they did their best to translate it to a board game. You can play 2 or 4 players. We just played 2 players, the 4-player
game. 2 or 4 players?
Yeah. We'll get into that in a second.
Okay.
So here's something I've noticed in these games, and we'll see how the different ones go. I think we even talked last time when I talked about that cool early 80s Miss Pac-Man game, that there was a cool differentiation between that 2019 Pac-Man game where they literally tried to replicate every piece of the Pac-Man video game onto the board. And then there's the Miss Pac-Man where they took the idea of the video game and turned it into a better board game. And so I kind of think of those as these two ways to turn these classic games into board games. Now, think about Centipede. What's going on?
Well, yeah.
There's a million mushrooms all over the screen.
Right.
There's a centipede. You shoot it. It turns into several centipedes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sometimes a spider comes bouncing around the screen.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the little missiles.
Yeah. Right. And they're dropping more mushrooms.
It makes more mushrooms. Yeah.
Right. And so here's how this centipede game plays. One person is the little archer. They call it a gnome or a troll or whatever in this garden. And you're the one who's trying to shoot the centipede and the enemies.
Okay.
That's what my wife did. She was playing that. That was great. My role was the role of the antagonist. I was the centipede, but I wasn't just the centipede. I was every enemy on the board that I had to micromanage.
Oh, Jesus.
And so the centipede is a segmented piece, as you can imagine. So when it's time for you to move the centipede, you really have no free will in the game. There's no control over, oh, I think I'll do this, or I'll duck, dodge, dip, dug.
It's like the video game. In other words, it's going to follow its own set of rules.
Well, the centipede's going to hit a mushroom. He's going to go down in reverse. And so I have to move the head, and then I have to move all the segments. Oh, and then I played a spider card. Let me spawn a spider and move it diagonally. Oh, I can't move it vertically. I got to move it this way. I turned out just being the damn computer was all I was doing in this game.
It's like analog centipede.
Maybe I should have done the sound effects. Should I have done the sounds at two? Now, I will say that everything about the game's manufacture is really cool. Like the pieces feel, they almost feel like they're made of wood, but there's some kind of a poly resin wood, actually. So it's got kind of a texture on it. The pieces are really sturdy and they're nicely made and they're colorful and vibrant. A few of them have decals so you can flip the head or the body of the centipede over. It comes with a special pin, a centipede pin. So I guess every one of these games has a limited edition pin in it if you're a big fan about pins.
Oh.
The good news is, for whatever reason, I guess I know why now, it's on clearance in many places. It's probably running for $10 or $12 instead of the original $29 or $30 that I think it ran. As a collectible, it's cool. I have no burning desire. I have no desire, burning or otherwise, to go back and play it again. It's almost like Plan 9 from Outer Space. You should look at this to see how bad a video game could be translated to a board game. But you're not doing it because you enjoyed it. You're doing it because it's a great example of how not to do it properly.
You're enjoying the train wreck.
So it becomes a wall display with inside the box, essentially.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Like you said, it sounded like analog centipede.
It is. It really is. Right. It's like, imagine somebody's making, like, have a hand crank. You know, they've got a mechanism to make centipede work instead of running the program. So it was fun to play with. And now I'm a little apprehensively looking forward to trying the other ones out, the Joust and the Missile Command. If all they're doing is literally translating to the board, yawn. I mean, yes, thank you for the pin. Thank you for the cool pieces. I frankly take the pieces out and decorate something. It's better use of them. But so buyer beware. We'll put a link in the show notes. You can take a look at it. It's super cheap these days.
It's more of a collectible than
Yeah, that one for sure is. We'll see how the other ones pan out.
All right.
George, I think that's enough of my centipede. Why don't we move on to you with your update? So this is really cool. You've been working your way through the alphabet with all these games you've had in your Steam library.
What letter are we up to now?
We're up to the letter I.
I.
And I'm going to preface this by saying apparently this is the episode of suck for me. So.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I finally ran into one that I didn't enjoy. So, you know that I choose the games basically just on the visuals and the description and nothing else. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I try to find games that feel like they would be
interesting
to me. And you
already own it.
Yeah. So this game is called Invisible Ink.
Like the title.
Yeah, it's a good title.
Like you write secret notes with? Like you can't see the ink?
No, Incorporated.
Oh, that kind of ink. Okay.
Yep. Glad you clarified that.
The description is, take control of Invisible's agents in the field and infiltrate the world's most dangerous corporations. Stealth, precision, and teamwork are essential in high-stakes, high-profit missions where every move may cost an agent their life. And the tags in Steam on this are stealth, turn-based strategy, cyberpunk, and indie.
I'm there.
Yeah, no, you're not. Trust me.
The espionage part sounds interesting. Those tags sound like they don't go together.
They don't. If you like I know, Mo, you play a lot of turn-based strategy stuff. I know you enjoy that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The problem that I have with the turn-based strategy mechanism in this game is that I make a turn and then the enemy is supposed to make a turn, right?
Right, right.
However, in several instances, depending upon what's happened, I make a turn and before I get to finish my turn, like with, because you play two different agents at the same time, you get to switch back and forth between them. And they have a certain amount of moves that they're allowed to do during your turn, like 8 or 10 or, you know, how you've upgraded your people.
Okay.
So like maybe I've done 5 moves with this one agent and I'm about to do something with the other agent. Nope, too late. The other people already get a chance to shoot you and kill you. Hmm. I hate that. It just drove me nuts. It's very difficult to figure out when things are going to happen. And in a turn-based strategy game, that's not happen.
No, you should always know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to be able to plan ahead with these many steps, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a fun little game I'll give you, or not, I mean, it's, if you don't, yeah, it's not even a fun little game. So,
oh no,
I was trying. Oh, I'm trying to give it the benefit of the doubt.
I feel
it came
bad,
out
man.
In 2015. Originally, it was $19.99 on Steam. I saw it today. It's on sale right now for 75% off. So it's down to $5.
Wow.
It might be okay for that. I bought it during my Humble Freedom bundle in 2017. As you know, I paid $30 for that bundle. And with 135 items, that means this game cost me 22 cents. And honestly, I feel like they owe me a quarter at this point.
Oh, dang. They owe you 3 cents.
They owe you 3 cents.
Yeah.
So does this have any redeeming qualities or anything in it that you did enjoy? I understand you didn't like it. You're going to go back to it probably. Is there anything in it that you're like, oh, that was a neat nugget, or is it totally a wash?
Yeah, actually, what made me play this game so much in preparation for the episode was that it's got a really interesting storyline and it's got some really nice animation for the cutscenes.
And that's important to you.
Yeah. And I really wanted to play the game and like it. So I kept going back to it and back to it and trying to figure it out.
I see.
And I probably spent like 3 hours just going back and forth and trying to figure this game out. And every time when you start getting into just like the second and third levels, even like after the training mission, and you start doing your first 2 or 3 missions after that, it just, every time it would have that weird mechanic of you've done something, but you haven't completed your move, your turn yet. And then they get to kill you instantly during your turn.
Yeah, bang, you're dead.
And I'm like, okay, I get that. Yes, I might be crossing their field of vision and everything, but if you're a turn-based strategy game, let me complete my turn, let me get all the way through it, and then I'll suffer whatever consequences happen.
Exactly. At least then I know what's happening or what's going to happen, or right?
Yeah. My thought was, I'll move this guy here and then take my other guy, move him up behind the enemy and kill him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Make him unconscious and take his stuff, whatever.
Best laid plans of mice and men. Yeah,
but
it didn't work out.
It just
that
wouldn't
way.
Do it. Can't recommend it really, so the best I could do for it, because it's got a good storyline and it's got some nice animation and some good graphics, and it is an indie game, which I do appreciate. The best I can do is 2.5 tokens out of 5.
That sounds pretty generous, actually. Wow, based on your description.
Generous. Yeah,
sounds
good. I think that's very generous of you.
I was trying to be.
Yeah.
So before we move on to Mo, you have a running total now. We're up to the letter I. How much have you spent on all these games we've looked at?
Yes, I do have a running total. If I had bought the Humble Freedom Bundle each time just to get the game, I've spent $120 at this point. If not, because I only bought it the one time, if you want to go with that, I've spent $60.32 on the bundles. Yeah. The games themselves, I have spent a total of $2.81.
That's ridiculously wonderful.
My savings subtotal is $122.10 based off of their full prices that they have on Steam, not when they're occasionally on sale for 75% off like this one is right now.
Yeah. That's great.
Again, because this was a Humble Freedom Bundle, I have another Steam key to give away.
Aha. Okay. What game do you have now?
So this game is called Mini Metro, and I know nothing more than
it's
called
Mini
Metro.
Yes, I know that one.
You know that game?
That's fun. It's a puzzle game. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're basically setting up a metro system for a city.
Well, there you go. So we have a Steam key to give away if anybody wants to write in and say episode sucks in the subject line.
Episode sucks in the subject line to podcast@genxgrownup.com for your free Steam key to Mini Metro.
There you go.
Which is a good game. Better than Invisible Ink, I will go on record.
I played that one for quite a bit.
Well, then I'm going to go play that because apparently I already have it in my library somewhere.
Right. Mo, how about you? So you have something you've been playing.
Yeah.
Is still in early access, not fully released, but you've been checking out.
Let me tell you. Okay, so I'm gonna save us here because I really like this game.
Okay.
I really, really like this game. I'm going to not bury the lead on this one. It's called Hard Space Ship Breaker.
Okay.
Like you said at the beginning of the show, basically you're part of a salvage crew. So it's the future, right? Spaceships are like everywhere. So they're almost like you're dealing with old cars in a sense, except they're spaceships. And you're trying to break them down and salvage them for parts. And you have tools. And it's all first-person perspective. You're in zero G, so it's a lot of really cool physics. You're sitting there, you have to break apart the frame. You have like laser cutters. You have grappling things, the tethers. You can tether things together. There's a whole backstory too. There's like unemployment's rampant in the world and da-da-da. You're trying to get off. The only way to do it is to go into a huge amount of debt, and you start this game off with $1 billion of debt.
A billion with a B. Billion dollars B. in
wow.
debt.
Wow. So I'm Donald Trump. Dollars. Nice. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. $1 billion of debt, and you're trying to get your way out of debt so you can start actually making money.
So salvaging things so you can get out of that.
Right.
It's like student loans. You go in huge debt
exactly.
with the promise of making money down the road. Yeah.
And there's a lot of tongue-in-cheek humor in it too, because like the corporation that you're working for called Lynx, it's like when your oxygen gets low, it gives you a warning. It says, your oxygen is low. Please know that excess carbon dioxide can hurt our equipment.
Wow. Your breathing is going to cost us money.
Exactly. And the other thing is like all the equipment you have is owned by Lynx, so you're paying to lease it on top of it.
Yeah.
So you have to get enough salvage to try to at least cover your cost of leasing all this equipment.
Right.
And the thing is that really makes it cool is that one is the physics of you actually have to cut pieces apart to separate them in order to make them small enough for you to actually throw them into the processors. In the higher levels, if you disengage the coolant system because you're trying to salvage that at the wrong time, the reactor starts going critical. If you haven't planned for it, then it goes critical. And literally, the explosions are actually really cool to watch because the whole ship just blows apart.
And is it like a first person or a third person?
First person.
All right. So you're out there and you see your tools and the work that you do. And this is early access. So did you buy it? Did you pay for it?
I bought it.
Okay.
It was on sale. It was $20. The description that really got me was they said, imagine taking apart the spaceships from Homeworld.
Oh, right. Okay. That perfectly, I have a picture in my mind.
Okay.
I get it.
Exactly. And that's what these ships look like the Homeworld ships.
This sounds like something that would be a lot of fun to play multiplayer. Does it have that capacity?
No, it doesn't yet. It's on the roadmap.
No? Because imagine a crew, like you'd be a salvage crew. You're out there. You do this and you do this. Yeah.
Actually, I think it would be great because the thing is that these ships get big quickly.
Okay.
And you only have like, every time you go out to salvage, you only have like a shift that you only work so long. So you can only get so much done that you go back again for a second shift. If you have multiple people, you might be able to accomplish a lot more. I totally agree. I think this is like begging for a multiplayer kind of co-op sort of deal here.
So how much have you burned down your initial $1 billion in debt?
Oh my God. Okay. So I played about 15 hours.
15 hours, Mo.
Jesus.
Yeah. I bought this thing about a week ago. So
a week ago, 15 hours.
Oh, you just not doing your regular daytime job anymore? Is it just now buying video games and playing them?
I'm just hoping no one from my job is listening to this, but it's just so, I have to like not start this thing because it's one of these things when you start it, you're like, wow, I gotta get this ship apart.
15 hours.
It just flips me on that whole, that completionist feeling.
Yeah.
When you're done and you feel good about it. It definitely like feeds that. And it also feeds that whole, like you feel like you're getting better as you play it. You're like, oh, now I know how to properly take apart this thing to get the maximum salvage of it. Right. Now I know how to properly take apart this without blowing up the ship. So you feel like you're actually learning.
That's a well-designed game.
It is.
If it pulls you through it and you want to do more stuff.
Oh, no.
I'd never heard of it, and now I'm intrigued.
Now, the cool thing is that it is early access, which I'm usually very wary of getting anything early access. But let me tell you that they already dropped the first update, and it seems like they're listening to people's comments. Because one of the things, like, for instance, just a small example, but the first thing I was like a transporter, right? We're for people, like transporting people. Mm-hmm. And I was looking in there, and there was just chairs everywhere. And you could salvage chairs.
Yeah.
But the thing is that there was like 30 of them. I'm like, am I going to pick up and move 30 freaking chairs, right? That's just tedium. Right. The update came in and they actually did, they created benches. So one is not like five sets of chairs.
So you salvage big chairs.
So you salvage, but that's a lot easier. I'm like, okay, I'd rather do eight of those.
So you're saying it's little changes, but they're doing little tweaks to accommodate the criticisms that people have.
It sounds like, and plus they're making some big changes as well. But so far, like I said, I have to like just not start playing it because I know I'm going to kill at least an hour or so, you know, every time I do. So I definitely recommend this one. And just looking at the reviews from all the other, you know, big, like rock, paper, shotgun. They're all giving it like 9 out of 10.
Wow.
This thing. Because it's also a different type of game now. You're not shooting people. You're not blowing things
up. It's like, I want to try it and I almost kind of am afraid to try it now based on how addictive it sounds.
I was actually thinking about, this is what I was, every time I'm playing this, John, I'm thinking about you because I'm like, John would love and hate this game.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I say, I think this will totally feed into like the little OCD side.
Oh yeah.
You know, that you're like, oh, if I cut it right here, I can maximize the aluminum.
Don't do it to me. Don't do it to me.
And it's only $20.
You shut up.
And it's already gotten like on Steam, it has like almost 3,000 reviews and are all very positive.
Damn. All right. And it's called Hard Space Shipbreaker.
So I definitely say go for it.
Thanks, Mo. Thanks.
Say goodbye to your children before you head.
Goodbye. It's been nice knowing everyone.
Yeah.
I don't have time for the podcast anymore. I've got to go salvage a spaceship. Sorry.
Yeah.
I wanna get out with the sunshine, but it's a perfect time to play now. Just my friends, fruit bars and fruit roll-ups. We're having fun on a Saturday. We love our fruit roll-ups. And we're crazy about fruit bars. Real fruit and fun, yeah, they're the ones. We love the same things they do.
In a world infatuated with comic fandom, comes a show to help us remember the talents that have inspired us.
Whoa, 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 cut.
Oh, come on. It wasn't that bad.
It's a bit dramatic. Let's just tell them about the show, guys.
We are the Canned Air Podcast.
Join us weekly for a comedic trip through pop culture.
We also welcome some cool comic creators, as well as some of the voice and screen actors that helped shape your childhood.
Find us on cannedairpodcast.com and on the Evergreen Podcast Network.
We have just about wound up this edition of the show, but before we do, we like to take a moment here toward the end to talk about what we're looking forward to between now and the next time we get together to record the podcast. Let's start with you, George. What are you looking forward to?
I am looking forward to what I'm going to call this is a toy, because it's something that harkens back to my youth, but it's not the typical toy that you would think of. It's not like, you know, some Legos or some little army men or anything. Mm-hmm. I am looking forward to something that we recently talked about on one of our Backtrack podcasts. Do you guys remember when we talked about collectible glasses?
Oh, of course.
Of course. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
There was a set of glasses in there that I talked pretty heavily about wanting, the Wendy's newspaper glasses. There was a set of four of them.
With the article, like first landing in the moon. And
the
that
first
kind of thing,
page,
right?
Landing in the moon, yeah. The 1980 Olympic hockey team.
Mm-hmm. Right. Miracle on Ice thing. Right. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one of our podcast listeners, Marcus, reached out to me on Discord, and he found the entire set available on eBay. The little bastard. So
and then he bid against you, didn't he?
No.
No, okay, good. He already bought them. It was out selling them again.
They weren't a bid. It wasn't his thing. They were just a buy it now thing. But
yeah. Okay. All right.
So it was $15 for the entire set. Awesome.
Oh, that's not
great
terrible.
Price.
That's
okay. Awesome. Yeah. There was also $15 worth of shipping because they're glasses.
They're
going to ship them super careful so they don't break. Yeah. But it's a set of four of those Wendy's glasses. They should arrive sometime between now and July. July 8th. So it's just kind of weird, but I did get an email.
What year?
What year?
Is it a Kickstarter?
2022. Yeah. Now, he did send me an email 2 days ago saying that he has shipped them now. So I think I'll get them way before July 8th. So
that's great.
I'm looking forward to it. And Marcus, thank you so much for sending me the link and costing me $30 of my Father's Day gift money, but it was well worth it. I enjoyed spending it, and I can't wait to talk about them on the next podcast whenever they come in.
Yeah, when they come in, you got to definitely get some pictures too.
Oh, absolutely.
So I can throw them like on the nose and stuff.
You can go on eBay
right
now and look at pictures of them. They're there.
I want to see yours. I want to see your glasses that they arrived intact.
Yeah, the fourth listeners have really been enthusiastic about that episode. We've got a lot of email about it, and myself, I went to a flea market a couple weeks ago, and I found a King Kong glass and some other stuff. Mm-hmm. It's more on my mind now since we've done it, and so every time we do one of the backtracks, I end up buying things. I know, so it's infectious.
Yeah, the sad thing is now I have to figure out new ways to display this kind of stuff.
Yeah, because you have more.
A smaller space, because as we all know, my wife will not allow me to put these things out in the living room. So I have to find creative ways to display these really cool things. And right now it's just all in my room. My wife comes to my office all the time. Why do you spend all the time in this room? Because it's where my stuff is. You won't let me keep it anywhere else.
Oh, poor George.
Yeah, she's like, oh, okay. And walks out.
The goal is working. And my plan is afoot.
It's wife repellent is what you have. So I am looking forward to a new season of a series that I pretty much thought was done. Coming July 1st, which is, I guess, yesterday for you if you're listening to this show on the day it releases, but it's slightly in the future for me. A brand new season of Unsolved Mysteries. That amazing show hosted by Robert Stack. Not hosted by Robert Stack any longer, but you know,
trench coat, right? He always wore the trench coat.
But the trench coat, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where he did his best McGruff the Crime Dog impression.
So Netflix is putting out a new season of Unsolved Mysteries 2020. 6 episodes all dropped together on July 1st. And they're new mysteries. They're new kind of, there's a paranormal one in there, like with some alien stuff, I think, but, you know, and crimes and stuff like that.
Okay.
And I haven't seen any of them. I've seen a trailer, but I love that series. It's like a popcorn series.
It is.
It's like following a story or even care about the thing. The way it was put together, the over-serious attitude of the original was just so great. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with this new season of Unsolved Mysteries, all going to be on Netflix. So you've already got it. You got access to it. So
nice. Nice.
Yeah. Mo, how about you?
I'm looking forward to a movie. It's already dropped, actually, but I haven't watched it yet. It's Jon Stewart's movie called Irresistible. Have you heard of this?
Heard of it. Know nothing about it.
I haven't heard about
Steve Carell's in it. Huh? He stars in it. Jon Stewart wrote and directed it, I believe. It's about a Midwestern town where a guy's running for office.
Ah.
And what I heard, that there's stuff I said that people are like, wow, you know, Jon Stewart left the Daily Show and we were wondering what he was doing. And like, well, it seems like he was spending his time well, is what I heard. If this is what he was doing, this kind of stuff.
Gotcha.
It's got Jon Stewart, which I'm a big fan of his. You know, Steve Carell, big fan of his as well. Yep. So I figure it just hits all the buttons and I can't wait to watch it.
Irresistible. All right.
A raging terror grabs hold of the universe. Monstroid. When Monstroid gets wound up, it grabs, it lurches, it spins, and thrashes. Because just like Hordak, it's bad. New from the Masters of the Universe. You put it together, action figures sold separately from Mattel. It's a grabber.
Coming up on 5-Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5-Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.
If there was anything in this show you'd like to learn more about, the show notes which accompany each episode are full of links to click and explore. Catch up on past episodes and get pinged every time a new one's released by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. And you know, iTunes reviews help more than you know, so if you haven't yet, please rate and review us in the iTunes app. And if you have a friend who isn't yet listening, why not? Tell them about us, they'll thank you later. You're our fourth listener, and we'd love to read your emails right here on the show, so hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. And finally, Gen X Grown Up is more than just this podcast. Our YouTube channel has hundreds of videos ready for you to enjoy, plus you can find our entire body of work on genxgrownup.com.
That will wrap it up for another edition of the Gen X Grown Up Podcast. You know, before we leave, I'd love to take a moment here toward the end of the show to thank our amazing patrons, the people that support us financially over on patreon.com. Literally take a few bucks out of their wallet every month to support what we do here on the podcast, over on YouTube, and on the website. And I'm so grateful for them. In fact, I want to tell each and every one of you how grateful I am. And I'm talking to you, Agile Dana, Blasted or Stash It, David Thomas, Jonathan H, T2, Stian, Levi, Stubaka, Travis, Mark, Chad, Dan, Tony, Tom J, Adam, Stu Monkey, Ben, Greg L, Marcus, Arlem, Chet, Mike C, Greg Z, Davis, Slowmo, and new since we last spoke, Matt and Jason.
Whoa.
Two people have joined us
as brand new
patrons over at patreon.com. Amazing. Thank you for supporting us, coming along for this ride. We hope to hear much more from you. If you have not yet become a patron, you love what we do, want to support us. George, would you tell the fine fourth listeners how they can go about signing up?
I would be happy to, sir. All you have to do is go to genxgrownup.com/Patreon. There's a couple of buttons to click, as you do on any website. You give us $1, we love you, you love us. You give us $2, we love each other doubly as much. $3, we start kicking in some cool behind-the-scenes stuff. $5, $10, $25, we've got new things up there. There's swag involved with some of the upper ones. Mm-hmm. I mean, we love our patrons. We will do everything to support them and give them the extra content, because what they do for us every single month by just donating even that single dollar, it means so much to each one of us. It allows us to keep producing these shows. It helps us to pay for the monthly fees for all the different tools that we use. It allows us to buy these spiffy microphones that we get to use for this podcast and other places. So we can't thank you guys enough. So all you have to do, again, go to genxgrownup.com/Patreon.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you, George.
That's why you asked me to say it.
That's exactly why.
This is true. This is true.
That is going to wind up this show. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a regular edition of the show again. But next week with our backtrack, we pick a single nostalgic topic and dig in deep. Mo, what's coming up next week?
Oh, I'm totally looking forward to this one. Hey, if you ever wanted to cut a can with a knife, carry an entire fishing kit in your pocket, scramble an egg while still in the shell, then you have to listen to our next backtrack, because we're going to be talking about stuff that, as seen on TV, stuff sold during commercial time only, as we were growing up as Gen X.
Mo, how much would you pay to cut a can in half with a knife?
Wait,
don't answer yet. If you order now.
Oh my God, there's more?
There's more.
You'll also get this set of steak knives. Yes, you will indeed. As seen on TV, coming up the next backtrack. You don't want to miss that one. I hope you'll join us for that. Until then, I'm John. George, thank you for being here.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know I appreciate you.
Oh, man, always fun.
Fourth listeners, though, we all appreciate you most of all, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. No more washing shirts till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up. Good.
Awesome.
All right. Game us.
All right.
Taking a drink. He's ready.
Got to get ready.
Well, let me make your headphones off.
I'm just making sure the cat's not around here so I don't scare the cat half to death with
this. Scare the cat. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen. Wendy's glasses.
What?
I can look forward to whatever fuck I want to look forward to.
Yeah. No, I wasn't laughing at it. That was funny. Did you order some? You'll find out in a second. We'll find out.
Yeah.
You'll find out.
Save it for the show. In 5, 4, 3. We've almost made it to the end of the show, but before we do, there's an important part where we like to talk about. I'm going to do that one more time. I like the difference, but it was awkward. In 5, 4, 3. We have almost made it to the end of our show, but before we do, we have a very important segment to look forward to what we're talking. Damn, fuck trying something new. Let's try one more time.
Blooper number 12.
Mix it up, and it just doesn't flow as easily. Yeah, take 17. In 5, 4. We are just about end. Just about end? Fucking talking. In 5, 4, 3.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book, and together we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.